All right, we're live. Welcome back to the Lions Collective. A lot to get into today. Cade Mays' injury. How will the Lions move forward, at least without him to start the year? We're going to talk the cornerback room, boom or bust X factors, and we're talking about tomorrow's preseason game for the Detroit Lions. It's Lions Collective. Let's get into it. All right, I'm your host, Jeff Biafredi, Woodward Sports, Crunchtime Sports. To my right, as your screen shows, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network. Below him, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic. We got Colton back. He's in the new place. It's good to have you back. And then Will Birchfield, 97, won the ticket. How are we feeling, fellas? Good to have you back, Colton. How's everything going with you? New place. You're a busy man.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of going through it right now. I'm not going to lie. Got a new place. All my stuff is still in boxes. I haven't even had time to unpack because literally maybe like the day after I finished moving, I had to go to New York for a wedding. I'm still trying to get back in the rhythm since I got back. So going through it a little bit, but I will have a little bit of downtime the next couple of days. So ask me again in like 2 days.
What is the big upgrade here? You got more space? You got an extra bedroom? What's going on?
It is. So my last place was about 700 square feet. This one's 1470. So more than double.
Oh,
yeah. It's multi-level. So it's got a bedroom upstairs, basically like two living rooms. Went over here. I got a family room back there. So only for like $200 more a month. I think I killed it. Like I was looking for like a good 3, 4, or 5 months and kind of settle in this place. So I like it a lot, man. I'm ready to get everything settled.
So much space for activities.
So much.
He's going to start like the model train collection.
Hell yeah.
I probably will.
Go and see the model trains, dude.
That's shout out to Golden, man. That's awesome. He's doubling square footage. I mean, hey.
Lions shout out to the viewers for helping make this happen for me. Thank you guys for watching us.
Yes, yeah. Of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. If everyone who's watching, by the way, we appreciate you. We got a lot to get into. Cade Mays was hurt, which, you know, you guys know Lions fans are the best. But when injuries occur, the immediate response is Dan Campbell does not know how to run a practice all of a sudden. That's like the big thing that at least I ran into a lot. We could talk about the injury and just the importance of that center position. I know last year we saw Graham and you know, he struggled and the offensive line struggled, but people are excited about Cade Mays. They have better depth behind him, which I think people should be a little more excited about. But what was your guys' reaction to the injury and just kind of replacing Cade Mays through that first couple games while he's out until that bye week around then?
Bro, and Dan steps to the podium and the first thing he says is, let's get this out of the way. You're like, all right, who's down and how long? And I don't know how many bigger gut punches there could have been, I think, for this roster. Obviously, the good news here, the silver lining is it's not season ending, but 8-10 weeks, I guess, is the initial report. That's still a gut punch, right? And so you look at this roster, you say, all right, maybe Jared, Panay, Aiden, Jack Campbell, Jahmyr Gibbs, like, I don't know if there are many beyond that really trump the loss of Mays, particularly what, you know, they went out and invested in this position. This was their primary focus this offseason was solving kind of the diminished play of the offensive line. And so obviously they also drafted Blake Miller, but, you know, they went out with intention to get Cade Mays. And, you know, Don't hit me with the practice stuff, particularly in this instance, right? Like every offensive lineman and defensive lineman in every practice in the NFL are going head to head, 40 to 50 snaps, full go. This was a relatively classic chop move that just caught an arm incorrectly. And look, you're as an offensive lineman, you're trying to stop these 300-pound angry bulls multiple times of practice. And it's football. Like every single snap, you're one step away, one bad snap, one bad collision from being put on the shelf. And that sucks, but that's just the reality of it. And so this is why Juice Scruggs is here. And I think that's where the conversation starts in terms of backup play. When we talked to Brad Holmes, you know, he was pretty high on Scruggs' center play. We saw Scruggs more snapping the ball during OTAs in the early portion of the offseason. He's kind of more transitioned into competing for that guard job here to start camp. But, you know, you've got NFL experience, you got a player the Lions like, you've got kind of that big frame that takes the space that works in conjunction with those two guards. He's on the shelf right now, you know, it's minor injury, but, you know, I'll lead into this also opens the door for Seth McLaughlin, right? Like this is a guy that was here before, Cade Mays. He was here before Juice Scruggs. He was signed the day after the season ended. And, you know, he's going to be the guy in this preseason one.
Yeah, I mean, first things first, I do appreciate Dan for getting that out the way, because there are some coaches that would try to drag that out as long as possible. So shout out to Dan for getting out the way up front. But, yeah, it is unfortunate to lose a player like Cade Mays. There's no question about it. We all know the offensive line was an issue for this team last year, and they went out and really tried to address it with that center position by drafting Blake Miller. They really want to rearrange this offensive line, make it competent in 2026. And so, you know, Cade Mays was the only multi-year contract that, you know, this team gave out to an external free agent. So to lose a guy, you know, 2 weeks in a camp, when this is such a really important time for that offensive line to gel. Remember last year when Taylor Decker was out, some guys were missing time here and there. Like, they really couldn't, you know, use that time to, like, get it together before the season. Then week one, they come out kind of flat. So to lose your starting center, like, 2 weeks in a camp, obviously it's going to hurt. And, you know, I will say I do like how they went out and got Juice Scruggs. I think at the time that was a little bit of an underrated move. Obviously, get away Demo to acquire him, but it felt to me that they were really trying to address that position to make sure that, hey, if something does happen, we're not in the same boat that we were last year, where we just were trotting guys out and praying that someone stepped up to the plate. That's kind of what it felt like to me. So to get Juice Scruggs, a guy that, you know, I know he's had some struggles in the NFL. Most of those have been at guard. I think he's been more competent at center. And he was a center in college, and a really good one, a second-round pick. So if you let him play his natural position and you surround him with guys that you think that, you know, can play, like Tate Ratledge, the way Dan talks about Tate makes it seem like he probably thinks there's a year two jump coming. And Tate really looks pretty competent out there. Christian Mahogany, I really like the camp that he's put together. So if you like the depth that you have at guard and the guys next to him, I think Juice can come in and just hold down the fort for six games, maybe seven. I'm not going to do the thing we did last year. I'm not going to do it. But six, seven games, if that's the case, I like what Juice can bring to the table if that's the role. Now, Seth McLaughlin, I'm not going to count him out either, because this guy won the Remington, you know, his final year in college, and he was a pretty good prospect. You know, I know he got hurt late there, but he's a good developmental piece, and I like the fact the Lions brought him in, and I'm curious to see what he can do with a little bit more run here and getting some first-team snaps. So they've got some options, obviously not ideal, but, you know, we're going to see how this plays out.
Dude, Dave Phipps totally would have picked up your 6-7. He would have been all over that.
Not doing it.
It's good self-restraint.
Leaving that in 2025.
I think they have put themselves in a much better position this year, at least on paper, to withstand the loss of a starting center. In the two games that had happened last year, they went from Graham Glasgow, who honestly was already playing like a bottom third of the league center, to either Tristan Colon in the game against the Packers on Thanksgiving, or Kingsley Aguakin in the game on Christmas against the Vikings. And the offensive line in both those games, at least in pass protection, was a relative disaster from the inside out. I think Goff was sacked a combined 8 times in those two games. And it wasn't just the backup center stepping in, but that was probably the root of the issues. And it feels like by adding Scruggs, they're in a better position to plug this hole for, call it, as Colton said, somewhere between 6 and 7 games. You know, maybe he's back after the bye late October for that first Packers game. Now, I would say even once he gets back, you should probably put on a couple extra weeks of acclimation period of finding his footing and his rhythm and his flow in this offense, reestablishing his rapport with Jared Goff that he had begun to establish over the course of camp. But I do think that Juice Scruggs is a much more capable, certainly a much more proven backup than anyone they had last year. Colon and Aguakin being the two guys they trotted out there, as Colton so kindly put it. But I agree, and I want to spell out just a little bit further maybe his history at center versus his performances at guard. So he played the majority of his snaps in Houston at guard, including all of them last year and all of them in 2023. And that's the biggest reason why, when you look at least his PFF grades, they're pretty low, like shockingly low. But when you isolate it to just his center play, his best season, at least by the measure of PFF, was 2024, when he got the bulk of his snaps at center. And that tracks for a player who, as Colton said, was drafted as a center, excelled as a center at Penn State. So he entered 2024 as the Texans starting center. And in those 9 starts, he ranked, per PFF, 15th out of 30 qualified centers, which if you really want to feel good about things, was smack dab over that stretch between Cam Jurgens and Ryan Kelly, two Pro Bowl centers. And more importantly, is how that stands relative to Graham last year. He ranked 29th out of 32 qualified centers. So the floor, even once you've lost Cade Mays, in theory, if Scruggs can reclaim his form from 2024 at center, is already a good bit higher. And you should feel better about that when it comes to surviving the first 6-7 games of the season, which, by the way, might be the easiest stretch of the schedule. If you're going to have to lose someone, a key cog, probably better in those opening games than obviously back of the year when there's some big division matchups and some of the competition gets tougher. But I go back to what Brad said when we asked him about Juice when we had him here on the podcast. And he said that, you know, they had a bunch of different trade offers and packages for David Montgomery, and a lot of them contained similar draft compensation to what the Texans were offering. But the difference, in Brad's words, was that Scruggs put it over the top for us. And the direct quote is that there were other teams willing to entertain similar kind of packages, but for where we were as a team, especially from an offensive line standpoint, to add a player like Scruggs, who we did a lot of work on in the draft process, his center ability actually was really impressive since he's gotten to the NFL. That was like a done deal for us. So, you know, I do think they feel better about withstanding a loss at center than they did last year. And even then they did entering the season last year with a clearly hobbled and staggered Graham Glasgow in the final season of his career.
Now we're focusing on Juice for, I think, obvious reasons, right? Like that seems like the logical fit, but obviously fans are very excited about Seth McLaughlin. You attach the Ribbington Award winner, yep, and it makes it exciting. I of course drift back to Charlie Ward. I'm going way back, but you know, college awards don't mean a whole lot in the NFL sometimes, right? Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy, didn't amount to anything in the NFL. But, you know, McLaughlin's got some size limitations. We saw him get bullied a little bit, some of those early snaps. But I think he's kind of settled down these last two practices and maybe starting to gain a little bit of confidence, momentum, whatever you want to call it, going to this first preseason game. Just let me throw out the percentage question here, because we know the Lions are pretty good about running a meritocracy. If it's these two, and I guess Michael Neese is in that mix too, what are the odds that somebody other than Juice Scruggs snapping the ball in week one?
Jeff, fire away, bro. Jump in. Hit us.
So I would say low. I would say low, just my opinion.
Yeah.
I really like Seth McLaughlin. I know when they signed him, and I made a video about it, I thought there was a lot to like. I mean, yeah, not to mention he played two big schools, Ohio State, Alabama. Won a national championship, Ribbington Trophy, like you already mentioned. But I think for this team, and I think we talk about this a lot on this show specifically, how important whoever's playing center, you'd prefer it to be someone that maybe has some experience just because of the Goff thing. As well, like I think Goff has a lot probably to say with who's playing center, not that he makes a decision, but kind of his preference of you know, who he wants under center. And I think that ultimately aligns with probably someone like a Juice. I don't see any outside additions. I think we know Brad well enough now at this point. He likes who's in house right now. I would assume that way. So I would say low. I think it's, if the question is anyone else taking snaps at center, I would say the chances are low, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're talking like Tate Ratledge, maybe. Like, I'm trying to think of other options in house.
Have you told Tate that yet?
No, I don't want to, because he's gonna beat my ass over the heel. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that's gonna happen. Like, Graham is not gonna come back. Sorry, I don't know who's throwing that out there, but I don't think it's gonna happen.
Frank Ragnow.
Graham is shutting that shit down before they even call.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess you're talking like an external addition, and that center position is so important. You have to know that playbook to play center for this team. So if you don't, I really don't see someone just coming in like as a late camp addition, being like, all right, this is our new starting center for week one. That could be a disaster. So I would imagine it's one of those two guys. So I'd put it at like 5%. I'll say that.
I like that.
I do think it's interesting that they went with McLaughlin over Neese, right? I'm going to change, by the way, yeah, I'm going to change Seth's last name every single time because I don't know how to pronounce it. So I'm going to hit on one of these. McLaughlin, I don't know. But we'll ask him next time I talk to him. But they went with him over Neese, who Neese has been here now, I don't know, Tom Kennedy length of time. So I think they clearly want to see what he has to offer. You know, this is a guy that I believe as UDFA got paid a pretty decent chunk of change by the Bengals to come in, even though he was injured. So I'm curious. I'm curious tomorrow if he can make them think about it, I guess is maybe the best way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clearly a two-horse race. Dan spelled that out on Monday when he first announced the news between Juice when he gets back and Seth. I'm going with Seth, boys. And I would say 65-35 that Juice wins the job. And the reason I'm a little higher on Seth than maybe others is because the Lions are. And this is from a conversation we had with Seth after practice on Monday. But, you know, he said they went into the offseason last year once they realized that there really wasn't much of an opportunity in Cincinnati, just evaluating he and his agent where he'd fit in best. And, you know, he said we had interest from a number of teams and we sort of evaluated which destination made the most sense for me. And he said the Lions were like the first or one of the first teams to call. They were really excited about me. They jumped on the opportunity when they heard my name. So we kind of approached it as where do you feel most wanted? And we felt like that was here. And I think that speaks to the Lions' belief in him. And obviously at the time, you would imagine they viewed him as more of a developmental piece, a project, but they see some ability in him and they're gonna give him a good shot here. And he also has the advantage of having, you know, a few extra at least practices over Juice Scruggs, who is still working his way back from that soft tissue injury. And sometimes those things can drag on longer than you initially thought. So, you know, if Juice misses, say, a week, that's a week in this race that Seth is ahead of him. And they're both working with Jared for the first time. It's not like Juice has banked meaningful reps with him himself. So when we talk about that relationship between center and quarterback being so crucial, Seth is going to have an opportunity out of the gate to establish that at a higher clip or a higher efficiency than Juice does. And, you know, I think the other thing that's really, I would say, intriguing about him is that, you know, he said last year was pretty much just like a get right physically year for him. He was coming off that torn Achilles, which happened late in the 2024 season. And even after that injury, entering the draft, I think a lot of scouts still had him pegged as at least one of the three best centers in the draft. And the injury scared teams off from drafting him. But he said he didn't feel like himself physically until late last year. Like football didn't feel normal until late in the year. And when I asked him if he feels now like he did in 2024 when he was named the best center in the country, he said he does. And it's really the first time that he can say that earnestly. He said, I'm moving around way better. He said, I'm back to where I was. That's pretty encouraging when you consider what he was able to achieve in 2024. So obviously the NFL experience would favor Juice, but I think there might be perhaps a higher ceiling for McLaughlin and the benefit of the fact that he's going to get more reps over the next week with Jared than Juice will. So I like his odds maybe a little bit more than some others.
Will has convinced me Kyle Robichaud is running for 220 tomorrow.
ABC's on, baby. Let's go.
Against Dexter Lawrence? We'll see.
By the way, that's a great point, Colton. Like, we're going to see these.
They're going to play starters.
So. Yeah.
So. How many snaps is Dexter Lawrence playing? 2.5?
All of them. Stat night.
Yeah.
Two and a half at 60%.
By the way, he's a bowling ball. I know we were showing, we threw him out there. That dude is a bowling ball. I know people use that a lot when you're talking about running backs, but
yes,
I'm excited to see what he can do for sure. Let's you know what? Let's take a break. Let me tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks, and then we'll return to the Detroit Lions. So I got some picks for you guys. If you guys have been following this segment's big deal. Okay, I don't know if you guys knew this or not, the audience. I mean, we really get after it here on Lions Collective. We've had some sick picks. I'm not saying that. The people have told me that. I'm just going with what the people are saying. So let me showcase what we're doing today. By the way, use the code HMA, play $5, get $150 if you win. This is what I'm going with for week one, game one of the NFL season for the Detroit Lions. So I am going with Jahmyr Gibbs more rushing, receiving touchdowns, 0.5. That is a give me. That is a give me. Gamble responsibly, but I love this. Sam LaPorta, 47.5 receiving yards. I'm going more on Sam LaPorta against the Saints. And do I have to explain while I'm going more on a receiver for the Saints? Do I really have to explain that? I'm going more for Chris Olave, 69 and a half receiving yards as well. We did rock with Jake Bates a couple weeks ago. I'm still all in. Okay. Nice. I have not shied away from that. So we got some good picks here. Again, use the code HMA. New users, play $5, get $150 if you win. Big
dude, I would rip that parlay myself.
I'm just saying, this is what the people are telling me. They're saying, Jeff, we love your picks. I know those guys, other guys are sweet. Their analysis is fine, but your picks are what we look forward to. That's what they're saying to me. So let's get back into it. Let's talk some quarterback depth because it seems to be a weekly thing we discuss on this show. People are paying attention to it. Rakusin, Nick Whiteside continuing to make plays. Ennis Rakestraw. Everyone needs an Ennis Rakestraw update. But just looking at that cornerback room, what are some things you guys have noticed or maybe some of the depth concerns they have in that room?
Jeff, where is most of the angst right now centered amongst the fan base? I have a feeling I know where it lies.
Well the angst is probably obvious. You know, it's Ennis Rakestraw. I think there's a lot of people that are probably we should have like an Ennis Rakestraw tracker somewhere so people can go on a website and just see how he's doing, because people are all in on whether he has a good practice. People are literally judging this thing, which is unfair, by the way, practice to practice based on how he's playing. But the positive thing is he has to stay healthy. So people are fired about that. And then Nick Whiteside, I think he's been getting a lot of praise for obvious reasons. You know, people are excited about him. So, and also Trevon Diggs was brought in.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I will say I would not mind it as another body in more competition. They worked him out. People were talking about that as well. Don't know where that goes. Not expecting much, but they've looked at options. We do know that as well. They have looked at outside options.
Colton, you're Rakestraw's guy. Lead us off here.
Come on. Yeah, let's go, Mizzou.
Yeah, I am.
Here's
the thing. You watch Rakestraw, especially like the first week or so camp, and he's getting beat, and he's getting beat consistently. But it's not like he's getting beat by three steps or like, you know, he's not even like in the vicinity of the receiver. He's right there. It's just these receivers are really good, and they're making these contested catches and highlight real plays, and the crowd's oohing and aahing every single time Jamon Saint catch pass on Ennis. And Ennis is a very serious guy, and he kind of dips his head and like jogs back. You're just like, man, you can't help but feel sorry for this guy, especially after all the injuries. But at some point here, he is going to have to step up and kind of string together a couple practices, as Campbell said himself the other day. Now, Campbell made sure to say he's had some ups and downs. It's not just downs. So I thought the other day they're doing one-on-ones, and I'm pretty sure he's trapped up J-Mo twice and was really – showing, you know, some competitive spirit out there, some competitive fight. So I want to see more of that. I think the coaching staff does as well. And so if he can do that in the preseason and start to string some of these practices together where he's showing the staff like, hey, I'm sticking in coverage. I'm becoming the guy that you drafted me to be as a second round pick. Because a lot of people had this guy as a first round talent because of his physicality. He hits like a linebacker. You know, he's a smart, instinctive player. Just sometimes he just gets lost. And so if he can start to show that over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks of training camp here, he will absolutely have a shot. But I also think at the same time, the coaches aren't just going to give it to him because he's a second round pick and he's on the field now. They are going to give Nick Whiteside a shot. Dan has said himself, like, he makes plays, it feels like, every single day. You know, obviously we know what Rakusin can provide as a veteran. I think they like him a lot. I do think they're just giving some other guys a chance to show what they can do since, you know, Rock is a veteran. And DJ, you know, he's dealing with a soft tissue injury right now, so it's opening up more opportunities for other cornerbacks right now. So, I mean, it's weird to talk about this position because we know it's not the deepest group, but I do think there are some bright spots here, and you just want to see those guys play up to what they can be. If they do, this room will be a lot better for it. If not, then you can start to worry.
Will, I just got before you talk here that Colton brings up the two strapping them down reps with J-Mo, and J-Mo's won way more of those reps, but in that one rep, Ennis sent him back to 2022. Like, that was the least efficient route I've ever seen. Like, every step J-Mo tried to take, like, Ennis was cutting him off.
And he ran the route for him.
It was a mess of a route. And so, yeah, I agree. Like, Ennis had a really good practice to start, and then it gets burned deep by Malik Cunningham, and that's just kind of the story of where he's at right now. Like, you see some good things, you see some bad things.
Yeah, I think we talked a lot about Ennis last week, so I don't want to repeat myself too much. What I will say is it was alarming to me anyways when Dan was asked at the start of this week about A, bringing in Diggs, and then overall his comfort level with the cornerback room and the idea of possibly adding more competition to that group. And he went right down in his mind the depth chart at corner. And he started with DJ Reed, and then he mentioned Rock and Whiteside, praised both for having good camps. Then he mentioned McCreary and said he can cover. Then he mentioned Dorsey. Then he mentioned Abney, and almost continued on with his answer altogether before, at the last second, circling back, almost like he remembered Ennis Rakestraw existed still, and mentioned Ennis, and he said he's had some ups and downs. He needs to string together a few good days here of some good stuff, but he can do that, and he's gifted. He needs to string together a few days here of some good stuff is a pretty firm statement that Ennis has got to pick his play up or else. And you can decide what "or else" might mean. It's probably too early on August 12th to even define that. But clearly Ennis Rakestraw has been demoted on this depth chart. He's running mostly with the twos now when he gets outside looks. I think it's fair to say that Whiteside has passed him as CB3, clearly behind Reed and Rock. And I don't know, guys, like, is there a chance that we get to the start of this season and the Lions' top two picks from 2024 aren't on this roster? At this rate, I think that's a conversation that at least is worth pondering. And before you guys weigh in, I just go back to what Dan said in OTAs or minicamp when he was talking about putting the roster together with a little bit more urgency, I guess, this year. And he had that great quote about, "We're not going to let anybody hold us hostage. That's not going to happen." At the time, I think we all interpreted that to be a reference to Terrion Arnold. And of course, they ended up releasing him, a few weeks later. But you could probably apply the same logic to Ennis. Dan said, we have a lot of open battles and our eyes are open. And it's the guys that are the most consistent, that can be trusted, that do it time and time again. Those are the guys we're going to lean on. And they're going to be part of the core group that we have here. He said, we need to see growth. We need to see development. At some point, you can't wait anymore. It's not fair to everybody else in this roster or the coaches. And, I think the way he spoke about Ennis a couple of days ago was a reminder that they are serious about taking the players that are best fit to help this team this season, regardless of their pedigree.
Another writer brought up the same scenario to me this week, Will. I don't know if it was just a conversation that echoed from Allen Park to here, but I thought about it when he said it, and I think if the depth was better, that would be maybe more of a conversation. I don't feel good about the depth. That's why we're having this conversation. And so I think that buys you a little bit longer leash, but there is no doubt he's been passed. You brought that up. Camp started off with Rock and Ennis kind of rotating by series for that number one job opposite DJ Reed, or the starting job opposite DJ Reed. Well, Reed's out and it's Rock on one side and it's Nick Whiteside on the other. And Whiteside dominated the lower tier receivers on the roster. And so they said, well, let's get him out there versus St. Brown, and let's get him out there versus Tesla and see how he holds up in those situations. And look, it's not perfect, and it's absolutely never going to be perfect for a corner trying to cover St. Brown. It's just nightmare fuel. But Whiteside's got interceptions the last 3 days, and there's some quirkiness to those, right? Like, one's an end of game situation where it's a little bit of a desperation heave in the end zone, but right place, your positioning was good. Another one, he corrals a deflection somebody else knocked away from St. Brown, and then one-on-one drill, so a little bit different, but he went up and took it away from Tesla on the back corner of the end zone. So I believe it was you that brought up, how well he did against Emeka in the Tampa Bay game. And Dan said, it doesn't matter who's across from him. Like, that's the appeal of Nick Whiteside, is he doesn't let himself lose the rep just based on who's lined up across from him before the snap. And that kind of confidence is what allows them to put confidence in him. And so I want to see Nick Whiteside succeed. It's a great story. He's a good dude. His confidence is, kind of road he's traveled. I think it's a really, really cool story, but I'm with Jeff here. Like, I'm intrigued by the Diggs conversation. I don't know if that is the solution, but what does it mean? It means they're not content with what's going on. They feel like they need more. And I kind of compared it to the Devin White situation, right? Like, that's a guy that I'm sure plenty of NFL fans, whether they're just looking at PFF numbers or in the Twitter echo chamber, just saying that guy's washed. Well, I'll tell you, like, Devin White might not be perfect, but he is absolutely far from washed. He looks pretty damn good and pretty damn good fit. And you can go back to Rocky Sin last year, 5 teams in 5 years, and he looks pretty damn good. Sometimes it's just about getting the right fit and taking a guy on a chance that, you know, has had a career dip, whether shoulder or I'm sorry, injuries or performance or whatever it is. They really could use another cornerback that fits that description. And I don't know if that's Diggs, but I would be almost surprised if they don't add somebody here, whether it's now or when maybe a veteran hits the waiver wire and roster cutdown.
Okay, I'm glad you went in this direction. Can I toss you guys another name that has pretty similarly impressive resume as Diggs?
Kendall Vildor?
Tre'Davious White. And look, I know in the past he's had some injury issues, but he remains unsigned, and that's despite playing well for the Bills last season. They just happened to be going young at corner. But White, by all accounts, still intends to play. He started 16 games last year for the Bills, allowed a pass rating and coverage that ranked 9th in the NFL, led the Bills with passes defended. And look at it, the Bills last year anyways played significantly more zone coverage than man. Maybe that doesn't jibe with the way that the Lions want to play defense under Kelvin Shepard. But I look at a player who probably a lot like Devin White is waiting for the right team to call, i.e. a Super Bowl contender and a team that, you know, has a, in our eyes, pretty clear need for more depth and potentially more playmaking at corner. And now maybe White would prefer to sign with a team where he can step right in as a CB2. And maybe that's not here with Rock playing as well as he has. But when I first started looking at names when they released Tarion, who could come in and perform as CB2s, Tre'Davious White was the first one that I jumped on. And like, yes, some of those numbers from last year are obviously inflated or boosted by the fact that he wasn't taking on those number one matchups. Like, he was mostly covering wide receiver twos. That would be the case here for anyone they sign off the street. DJ Reed, assuming he's healthy, is going to be your one. So that next veteran, if he comes in, is going to get those wide receiver two matchups. And I don't know. I think that Tre'Davious White, if he's looking for a team that could offer him a chance to win, would be a pretty compelling fit here late in his career.
There's way worse bodies you could work out, right? Like, bring him in. I understand he's 31 years old. I understand he's had an ACL tear and Achilles, but you just presented some pretty compelling numbers, you know, on a good team last year. And I don't care if you're covering wide receiver too. Like, that's going to be your role here too.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're going to be probably CB3 off the bat, and you've got to accept that. But if both parties are willing and the workout looks good, and that's what it boils down to. We're not in the workout room. We don't know how the movement skills are, but if it looks good and you feel like you can play that man-to-man coverage that they need, then by all means.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you mentioned the zone stuff. Like, I feel like that's less of a factor for the Lions right now. Like, if you're working on Diggs, in man coverage, he allowed five catches, 6 targets for 106 yards. Pass rating when targeted was 158.3. And that's in man
coverage. That's good.
So if you're working out Diggs, I feel like the numbers don't really matter a ton in coverage.
Yeah.
So I'd give White a shot. I just pulled up his numbers real quick, just taking a quick look. I mean, he allowed 6 catches on 16 targets last year in man coverage. That is
– sign him up.
37.5% passer rating when targeted, 72.7. Yeah. Well, I like that. He's
a really good season on a really good team.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be down for that if he's interested.
I think Spotrac had his market value at like $2.5 million. Like, this is not a deal that would cost a lot of money. And look, Tre'Davious White, for all we know, is just waiting for the Bills to call. He's obviously kind of been a Buffalo Bill for life. But the Lions could say, hey, you want to play in the new opening of the Bills Stadium? Guess where we're going week two, buddy. We'll bring you with us.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. I'm for that.
Before we move on, can I throw just a name just to get your guys' thoughts? I know we haven't talked about him, but what's going on with Roger McCreary? I think that's where I'm just interested. I know people are probably interested as well, because we saw start of camp, Izzy's out. He's got, you know, he was sick. McCreary gets that nod, but Dan kind of said they would have started Izzy's. And now you're seeing, you know, the up and down stuff from Roger McCreary. It's not really consistent. that's someone they signed, and people just kind of went, oh, starting at nickel. What I know this, there's a lot of corners here that have nickel versatility, you know, guys that are competing for the outside spot. You mentioned Keith Abney, but where does Roger McCreary kind of fall into this cornerback room, and including nickel, obviously? Like, how has he been looking?
He's been out. Not great, Bob.
He's been out there.
He's in the room.
I think you could probably roll back the tape on our previous podcast. I've never been particularly high on that signing. I think replacement level would be words that I used at some point. He's a good run defender. He's a good tackler, but the coverage numbers, not great. And I think that's shown up on the practice field day in and day out. Now, I will say, last couple practices, he's popped up positively in my notebook. I think, rebounding a little bit in at the right time, maybe turning a corner. But I look at that nickel competition as still very much wide open. And I know Izzy's kind of moved into maybe the forefront of it, but see Thomas Harper take some looks there. I think Roger McCreary still in the mix. Ennis Rakestraw has worked some in the slot. Like, I don't think they know exactly where they want to go with that right now. I think it's a bigger conversation than McCreary, but, you know, Will asked earlier if Ennis would be on the roster. I am absolutely not convinced that Roger McCreary is making this team.
Colton, was it your theory about whether Shep refers to you in practice by your first name or by your last name or number? Explain it for people, because it applies to Sir Roger McCreary.
Yeah, I think it's a good theory. If you're listening to practice, which, like, even fans in the crowd can hear Shep, because, you know, he's very loud out there. If he likes something you did, he starts off every comment with, "I like it. I like it, Jack. I like it, Barnes." Just every single time. If he hates something you do on the field, he says your name first and he makes it known. McCreary, what are we doing out there?
It's Roger every time.
Roger. Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of like the formula that we've kind of gotten down now. I don't know if it's a perfect science, but I feel like 90% of the time it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of Roger.
And Abney too, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But
not going great for the nickel.
He's a rookie. No.
I will say McCreary had a nice rep in coverage against St. Brown on a route down the sideline a couple of days ago. So just to give a picture to J. Rogers' point, that was one play where it felt like he was getting beat a ton early on in camp, but he stuck with him on a sip. So maybe he's beginning to find it a little bit. But I agree. When you start looking at how little it would cost them to cut him, I think he would be a very easy player to part with if it comes to that when it comes down to the 53.
Well, before we get into preseason, let's do boom or bust X factors. We talked a little bit about it before the show, but give me some name guys. Let's run through it. Who are some boom or bust X factors for you guys?
Jeff, you go first. I feel like you will have some good insights.
So let's set the guidelines.
Yeah,
we're going before you set the guidelines, and then I'll give you the names.
So this topic was actually inspired by Solomon Williams, who works for Lions PR. He asked me and Colton this question a couple of days ago on the sidelines watching practice. He said he's been taking sort of an informal poll since the start of spring practices, but he was like, you know, which player on either side of the ball that isn't an established star could have the biggest impact on this season based on their best possible performance or worst possible performance? Like, whose performance will change the trajectory of this season most among this team's unproven non-star players? So we'll limit the pool of players, just to keep it simple, to non-Pro Bowlers. How about that?
Okay, so I'll start with a boom player on defense that I think could change things dramatically. That, in my opinion, that's DJ Wonnum. I think that would be a player I would say, if that qualifies, is a boom or bust, because I think DJ Wonnum, Minnesota Vikings DJ Wonnum, where he's giving you 8 sacks, he's being disruptive, he can defend the run, we already know he brings that to the table, I think could be crucial and beneficial for this D-line, given we've had this defensive end two conversation. I love Derek Moore. I just don't think Derek Moore year one is going to be what Derek Moore will be year two, year three. So if DJ can provide that juice this year on that D-line and kind of add, as much as AQM got sacks, he just didn't really help out against the run, and DJ can do that. So I think he's kind of that massive X factor there on that D line, because we know what we have at cornerback, but if that defensive line's getting after, it's obviously going to help those guys a lot. So I'll go DJ Wonnum for mine.
Let's, I like that. Let's add a little quick context so just the fan base understands how Wonnum's being used, right? It's interesting, and maybe that whole defensive line. Wonnum is essentially rotating with Tyler Lacy opposite Aiden Hutchinson. And so Lacey's doing a lot of the early down stuff, a lot of the rundown stuff, and then Wonnum's coming in more on the maybe middle, second and medium, and obvious passing situations. And then Moore's mostly backing up Hutchinson, largely. You know, there's obviously some NASCAR packages where they're just getting a bunch of speed out there, but it's been interesting to see how much Lacey's been involved. And I wonder, as we talk always about workload with Hutchinson, if this more confined or reduced our distilled workload for Wonnum, maybe we'll unlock something. Because I think the thing that really stands out about him is high football IQ. Just really seems to have a feel for what's happening, and it puts him in good positions to do things like make tackles in the run game or bet passes down at the line on top of, you know, maybe what he offers in the pass rush department.
Colton, go ahead.
I've been going back and forth on this. Like, I think one of the names we talked about, like the three of us at practice the other day, was DJ Reed.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think I'll go with him. I mean, you paid this guy to be a CB1 a couple of years ago, and then you also drafted two corners like right after that. And the two cornerbacks that you drafted, you know, just haven't really been there. Tarion obviously is no longer on this team. Ennis has not lived up to the hype of a second round pick. We're talking about guys like Nick Whiteside is potentially in the conversation to start. So you really need your CB1 to play like a CB1. And that wasn't the case last year. I know he was injured. The hamstring obviously affected him. I thought he was much better before that injury the first month of the season, playing some good football. But I think he needs to get back to that this year for you to have, you know, some faith in that secondary, especially as Brian Branch works his way back.
Yeah.
Kirby, who knows what he'll be. Kirby's probably another good candidate for this just because we talking boom or bust.
Yeah. But he's made Pro Bowls. He's an all pro.
Well, he hasn't made a Pro Bowl though.
All pro. Yeah.
You're right though.
Got him.
I know he's still mad. He's probably still mad about that, not making the Pro Bowl that year. How do you go first team all pro without making the Pro Bowl? Never mind. Conversation. But yeah, you know, I think DJ, you know, I've liked what I've seen. I know he's dealing with the injury right now. It's like, man, you just wish he could be out there and playing, you know, consecutive football. But I think there's probably going to take it easy with him until the season starts, and hopefully he can get back to the player he was before he got here, because he was a really consistent, really solid performer out there for a lot of years with the Jets and even previous teams before then. So if he can get back to that level of play, I think it makes you feel better about the cornerback room. You can take a deep breath. You're not just like, oh, this guy doesn't work out. Like, what are we going to do? It's a little scary if for some reason he can't live up to that his own level of play. So I'll go with DJ for that one.
I like DJ a lot. And I actually think the downside of DJ is even more unsettling than the upside is enticing. If you don't have a CB1 in the NFL, like you're screwed. So, I think it's a great call.
For sure.
What you got,
Jared? I was going to cheat, Will. I was going to say Billings. Injury fill-ins, like your Chuck Clark and your Juice Scruggs of the world, like you're really hinging on those. But I think Blake Miller is an answer for me.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, if you're gonna throw a rookie into the fire, and all signs point to the rookie being thrown into the fire, you got to carry your weight, right? And I think an ideal world, he's Taylor Decker as a rookie. You know, a really reliable pass protector and adequate run blocker. But it could obviously go another way. It could take a little longer. I don't have long-term concerns about Blake Miller, but I think the rookie season could be rocky. And I drew this comparison when I was talking with Dave Burkett the other day. Larry Warford was drafted in the third round and expected to be a really good player and was kind of immediately thrust into first team reps as a rookie. And old boy got stuck against Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley every single day in practice and got his world and his mentals rocked. I mean, Warford was in a blender mentally and very kind of open about it. Like those guys really wrecked his confidence throughout that first training camp. So, you know, you wrecked him physically and you wrecked him mentally. But when he came out the other side of it, relatively early in his rookie year, he was so much better for it and looked pretty quickly like an NFL caliber starter in this league. And obviously, Warford went on to have a pretty damn good career, and particularly after he left here, three consecutive Pro Bowls with the Saints. And so when I watch Blake Miller get wrecked by Aiden Hutchinson, it's just kind of like, I mean, that's just kind of what you expect, right? But he will be better for it. And he just can't get down on yourself mentally. You have to understand that this is part of the growing process. This is part of the learning and the maturation. And if you can learn from those reps, you're not going to face many offensive or many edge rushers better than Nate Hutchinson. And so if he can, you know, process and learn from this and take it into the season, I think he can absolutely be an X factor for them on offense.
I'm with that. I think one of the most obvious answers here would be Aleem McNeil, but I feel like he was playing at a Pro Bowl caliber level in 2024 before he got hurt. So I'm gonna set him aside and go with the guy playing next to him, and that's Tyreek Williams. Look, they're putting a ton of stock clearly in the way they've constructed this roster, and Tyreek Williams taking a huge proverbial year one to year two jump. And I think this construction of the defensive line has changed a little bit from last year. It seems like they're putting a little bit more emphasis on speed, on twitchiness, on quickness, even in the middle, than straight mass. I mean, they were a mass oriented defensive line in the middle last year with Reeder and Lopez. They let both those guys go, and the two guys who are most equipped to step in there, obviously Aleem and then Tyreek, and they play different games than Lopez and Reeder. But I think the Lions are really hoping for a jump in interior disruption this year, and they're really expecting and relying on, you know, Aleem a full year removed from an ACL and Tyreek in year two to provide that. And, you know, there definitely have been some flashes from Tyreek in camp. It looks like he's a little bit quicker off the ball. He says he feels 10 times quicker off the ball, especially after, you know, the weight loss that was so publicized before training camp. And, you know, I think that's a guy that if you get the upside in him this year, all of a sudden with a guy that we all assume is going to be a great player again in Aleem, you're talking about a force, a dynamic duo in the middle of that defensive line, especially on potential passing downs. If you don't get that, if you got pretty much what you got last year out of Tyreek, you know, you're going to struggle, in my opinion, to constantly wreak havoc, to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks up the middle. So I think what step Tyreek takes this year will go a long way toward defining the defense in 2026.
Let's get into preseason. Tomorrow, the Lions play preseason, which, you know, people are fired up to have football back. So I'm a sicko. I'll be tuning into preseason, all preseason. But what are some things that you guys are specifically looking for, whether it's competition, specific players? What are some things you guys will be paying attention to for tomorrow's preseason game?
Every one of our answers is just Ahmed Hassanein. All of us.
Love it.
I made a joke to somebody yesterday, like, I'm going to do players to watch. It's just going to be Ahmed Hassanein 10 times. Like, he's the most exciting thing going. So can we say everything? Hassanein's off the table. We all got to come up with a different answer than Hassanein. Sorry if you, that was your direction.
How many times will Hassanein yak either before or during the game? So, send over under on that.
3.5.
I'm taking the oath.
He's going to celebrate each one too.
I'll go a little off the reservation, and maybe less so. He's kind of gained some momentum here, but I'm super intrigued to see Eric Hunter. I like love that. Kind of these UDFAs out of nowhere guys. I think we know my UDFA pick for making this roster, Aiden Kianana, is dead. He suffered a leg injury and already landed on IR. Really unfortunate. So have to go to the next one in Eric Hunter. And so you always have this caveat, right? When a guy's making plays and you're like, well, yeah, he's making plays as a third stringer, but it's against other third stringers, or a second stringer, it's against other second stringers. And most of those guys will be out of the league or on practice squad. And so it's like, it's good. You can only knock down the pins that are set up in front of you, but like it only means so much. So if I told you Eric Hunter intercepted a Luke Altmaier pass to Zach Horton, you'd go, okay, cool. Well, what if I tell you he intercepted a pass off Jared Goff's arm intended for Sam Laporta?
Mm.
Now your ears are perked up. I hope.
Yeah.
I hope. And it was the very first padded practice, the very first drill they did. It was a one-on-one tackling drill without tackling. It was more about angles and cutting off the ball carrier in space. And Hunter just jumped off the page for me. I mean, just the angles he took, kind of the long levers he has and kind of bottling up the ball carrier. And I was like, okay. Then you hear Dan talk about how great he's doing on special teams, how he's just ripping reps every single day. And we see it to an extent, but to hear the coach kind of affirm that says something. And then you have the interception and you see some of the coverage traits in general with Hunter, which he considers kind of his area of expertise. And so the limitations, as Campbell said, is he doesn't know what he doesn't know. That's the downfall of coming from a small program like Morgan State. But like the physical gifts, look, if he shows up on special teams in the preseason, I'm keeping Eric Hunter over Roy Reeder or Joe Bocci. Like that's, I'm taking the upside over a vet that's a one-year vetman deal. And so I want to see if Hunter can carry some of these practice performance traits to the preseason.
Did you mention his hit stick on Meeks a couple days ago in practice too?
Woo! Lit him up.
Yeah, dropped him with a shoulder. I mean, didn't even tackle him. Meeks caught a pass in the flat turn. Bang! Like, blew him up. So yeah, I agree. Eric Hunter has definitely popped up in the notepad a few times. You know, I was going to say Blake Miller for this one. I don't want to reiterate too much of what you said already, Justin, because I agree with all of it. I will take you guys inside a conversation that the two of us had yesterday. I was sitting down writing about Blake Miller and I just turned to Justin and I said, hey, on a curve, all things considered, he's a rookie. He's repping a ton against Aiden Hutchinson. He's trying to learn a new offense. How would you grade Blake Miller 2 weeks into camp? And your answer was, Justin?
C.
Yeah. And
I
think that's fair. And then I say, okay, well, in a vacuum, if he was just defined as what the Lions want him to be this year, which is a stable starting right tackle, the grade is probably more so far, again, so far, 2 weeks in.
You know, a little bit more C-.
Yeah, C-. And so I think tomorrow is a good opportunity for him to show what he can do against someone other than Aiden Hutchinson that still is a starting caliber NFL defensive end. It sounds like the Bengals are going to play most of their guys. I don't know if Boye Mafe is expected to play, I would assume. And so you hope that you can see Blake get some pass pro reps against a player of that caliber and hold his own. That's clearly where the Lions want to see him develop the most. It was no surprise when Dan said that a couple of days ago, based on what we've watched in training camp. It feels like, you know, he's got all of the attributes and ability in the run game that they're looking for. There's really no concern there, I don't think. But Dan did say when I asked him, like, where do you need to see him grow the most to know that he's your guy by week one? Most of it's in pass pro. And, you know, maybe that's a function of just kind of getting taken to the woodshed by Hutchinson so often this training camp. But I had a chance to talk with Blake yesterday for a pregame interview on the radio that will run tomorrow night. So catch that. But I want to just tease something he said here, because I asked him, like, how do you measure your growth in pass protection? What should it look like to you over the next few weeks? And he said, and this is something that, like, you know, I'll have in mind when I'm watching him tomorrow night. He said, for me, I got to have my feet planted, got to have a great base to punch off of. I got to be ready to punch. I got to be in phase and I'm throwing those hands. So, you know, I'll be pretty intrigued to watch how Blake handles himself tomorrow in those one-on-one pass reps, especially if, or pass pro reps, especially if they come against a guy of Mafe's capability.
Yeah, that's a great one. I think I'll go with, it's kind of going back and forth. Can I give you two names?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Nick Whiteside is obvious. Like,
yeah,
really all these cornerbacks that we're watching that are going to play tomorrow, because the Bengals are playing Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
So right off that alone, like, if one of these guys can hold their own against those dudes and, you know, show us something, that will probably elevate them over the other if they're neck and neck right now. So curious about him, those two guys in particular. And then I go with Seth McLaughlin for a similar reason, just because Dexter Lawrence is playing some snaps. Now, as Justin mentioned, don't know how many snaps he's going to play. It could just be like three or four. But if we're going to see that matchup, you know, look, I saw McLaughlin kind of get taken I saw him get a little burned by Aleem McNeil the other day in practice. Mm. And like Aleem does that to a lot of guys. So I'm not going to like hold against him. But if you're judging a potential player that could be a week one starter for this team, then I got to see how they do against other team starters. And if a team is going to play their starters against the Lions in the preseason, and McLaughlin is going to be the starter, would like to see how he holds up. So if he can hold up and just like, not, I'm not saying he's got to dominate Dexter Lawrence, but if he can just like not get knocked back into the quarterback, then that's a positive sign and a guy that you can maybe start to believe in a little bit more as training camp continues. So I go McLaughlin and I'll go the two corners. I'll go Ennis and I go Nick Whiteside.
I like that. Can I toss out one more, but it's going to be in the form of two names. There's an interesting rise going on at running back with Vaki having been sidelined for a bit with the nose injury, obviously with Gibbs having his hold in and Pacheco being sidelined. Sailors and Jabari Small have gotten a ton of run here, probably more than they would even like, as Justin said last week. It was funny when Jameer was asked about that. He was like, hey, that's on me, my bad. I got to get back out here and spell these guys. But I think, you know, one of those guys has a chance in the preseason and the rest of camp to potentially pass Sione Vaki on this depth chart. And that's painful for me to say as someone who said he might have more carries this year than Pacheco. But, you know, you can prove yourself in on stages like this, especially to a staff that puts a lot of stock in these games. So, you know, I'd be curious to see what one of those two guys can do.
Did Will just hedge a bet?
Yeah, yes. Completely.
Yes, he did.
I'm not sure Jabari Small is going to play tomorrow, Will.
Okay.
He was fighting through something. He didn't practice that last one. So if you know what that means, a little bit more Kai.
Yeah, baby. Let him rumble.
I'm going to go with the guy who's handing the ball off to Kai. I'm going to go Luke Allmire.
Yeah, to do it.
The reason why I do genuinely like the skill set he does, I think as the way he plays quarterback would fit ideally if he could kind of continuously improve with what the Lions want to do at quarterback, because he can move, but he's a pure pocket passer. Very accurate. I got to watch him a lot just watching college football games, and I really like Luke Altmyer, and I think he's got to go, even though the Pastrnak is currently ahead of him. The Pastrnak, Josh Dobbs, which, you know, it's a good signing by the Lions there. I just think this is a good runway for Luke Altmyer. I know Dan mentioned it. He just needs reps. Well, here you go. Throw you out in the fire against the ones, basically, of the Bengals. So I'm very curious to see kind of how he responds. It's only being 23 years old, and he's played at least far, started a lot of games in college, but I am curious to see how that translates to preseason. So I'll go Luke Altmyer.
Dude, I have never heard that nickname for Dobbs. That is epic.
The Pastrnak?
Nah, I did not. Never. Bring it up unreal.
To him. Yeah, everyone calls him that.
Yeah, Pastrnak. I definitely will. Pastrnak. Yeah.
Did either one of you, when Dobbs walked out, first team rep, just drops one of the best passes of camp, just this corner route to Cedric Wilson between two defenders, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Luke Altmyer. Your chances, just one pass, done. Yeah.
How do you compete with a guy who's working with NASA? I mean, the brain capacity that Josh Dobbs has, I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
Yeah, Luke saw that pass and had the face mask meme where it's smiling, but he's actually crying behind it.
it'll be fun. And we'll be here next week to recap it all. We appreciate you guys. Lions Collective, subscribe if you haven't already. Hit the like button, of course, as always. And check out these guys' work. You check out my work as well. And we'll catch you guys next week.
Wait, and that last segment was brought to you by Dog and Pony Show. Just toss it out there. Let's go.
I'm glad you brought that up, which, by the way, we did our pick for the preseason game. We each gave our pick. Your pick should be Dog and Pony Show Brewing, which, by the way, if you mention Lions Collective, you get $1 off, which I know it's like, oh, it goes a long way. You go there, you have some beers with the boys or girls, you get $1 off. It adds up. So you say you watch Lions Collective, Kyle will hook you up. They're great over there at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. So
the more you drink, the more you save.
Yeah, there it is. Until next week, we will catch you all.
Peace.
Good show.
That's Will's stock market.